Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I call the war for the free world. Few members of Congress have been more devoted to waging that war and more effective in doing so than our guest in this first segment. She is Ileana Rose Leitanen. She served as the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. She currently serves as the chairman of its Middle East subcommittee. Her expertise in a whole host of areas that we will be talking about today is extraordinary and very influential, and it's always a treat to have her with us. Ileana, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Hey, Frank, it is always a thrill to be on your program. Thank you so very much for the invitation. I'm always ready, willing, and maybe not so able, but always willing to chat with you about the important topics of the day. But I'm the one who should be interviewing you most of the times because you're the expert at all of these topics that you just rattled off.
Well, you're very kind, and let's commune together here a little bit. Let's start with your thinking, Ileana Rose Leitanen, on the issue du jour for many in Washington at the moment, namely the threat that is being posed to us by this group that goes by different names but currently is calling itself the Islamic State. We're being told that this is the greatest threat that we faced in quite some time, and it's a threat to us here at home. Is it all of that? And if it is it because of the nature of the group itself so much as it is perhaps that it is part of a larger global jihadist enterprise?
Well, I agree with you, Frank. This is part of the global jihadist enterprise. If we focus on, well, before it was defeating al-Qaeda, and then it becomes, it morphs into another entity. And there are so many of these terrorist organizations throughout the world. And now we're focusing on ISIS or ISIL or IS. It is no matter where it is, whether it's in Africa, whether it's in the Middle East, wherever it is, it's part of this global jihadist environment, and that's why it is so dangerous for the United States to get back to a 9/10 mentality and forget the problems that caused 9/11. And it wasn't one particular group of people, but it's this hateful ideology that wants to destroy us because of our values, because of our beliefs. And we no longer have that luxury of thinking, oh, well, if they only were exposed to the West, if they only would go to school here or get accustomed to our culture, then, well, we're just absolutely lovable. But the truth is that many of these folks have deep U.S. roots, and the 9/11 terrorists, they were living here in the United States. So it's not getting accustomed or being educated. Bashar al-Assad, after all, was educated in London, and he's murdering his people right and left. But what we've seen is that this administration, the Obama administration, has had an incoherent and indecisive and competing foreign policy objectives and has not seen this as a global jihadist movement. And now it's coming to a head, and yet the administration doesn't have a decisive policy to deal with this threat.
Right. And Ileana Rose Leitanen, when you get back from your current recess, I expect that one of the things on your agenda will have to be addressing the possibility of a new authorization for the use of military force. And I very much hope that one of the things that will be in the mix in any such new authorization will be a recognition of just what you said, that this is an ideological fight at its core, and therefore military force may be necessary, but it's not sufficient, and certainly narrowing the focus of that to just one group isn't the way to go.
And Frank, when we narrow that perspective, it makes us more vulnerable. because then it gives us this sense of false safety that, oh, well, as the president had said, we've got Al-Qaeda on the run. Well, it doesn't matter what you call it. They still have, and they may not like each other, but they have one thing in common, and that the enemy is the United States. But you're right. What awaits us now is possible debating this issue. I don't know what the president is going to do, but he's authorized the air surveillance of ISIL or ISIS in Syria in what may potentially turn into targeted airstrikes against the terrorist group now in Syria as well as Iraq. And I think it's vitally important that we strike ISIL and do whatever we can to defeat this terrorist group. But we must also do so with the understanding that what is going to happen with Assad? Is the administration still with the notion that Assad must go? Are we really going to be then Assad must go, but we're going to ask him for permission or consult with him if we do these airstrikes? You know, the people of Syria, as we know, Frank, they rose up 3 years ago demanding freedom and democratic reform in Syria. What did Assad do? Well, he responded with mass murder. He used chemical weapons, unprecedented destruction, and managed to coalesce the worst of the worst terrorists together in what we now see as ISIL. But what did President Obama do? Well, he failed to support these pro-freedom movement activists from the start. And maybe if he had done so, if he had pressed really for Assad to go, we wouldn't have had all of the 200,000 dead in Syria, millions displaced, an ever-expanding jihadist organization. So Obama has conducted airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq, and he's provided arms to the Kurds, but it took them so long to get there. And those are two important things, because the Kurds and the Iraqis that fight ISIL on the ground, they're fighting for their security, they're fighting for their future. So I was glad to see some countries like Albania, Canada, Croatia, Denmark, Italy, France, and the UK, they've recently committed to joining us and helping to arm the Kurds with what they need to fight ISIL. It's an important step because it isn't just Iraq, it isn't Syria, it isn't just U.S. This is a global issue, as we say. This is a global jihadist. We've seen recently the involvement of Europeans going to these countries.
Let me turn quickly to another issue that seems to me to go directly to the heart of the kind of misconduct of the Obama administration when it comes to the constitutional separation of powers and checks and balances. And that is, the president announced that he's going to issue an executive order, or his leaking, I guess, is perhaps a better way of describing what's happened than announcements. But apparently they're going to be pursuing via executive agreement what amounts to a new treaty on climate change. And I just wonder, Eliana Rose-Leighton, as a longtime and very experienced legislator, what should the response of Republicans in the House particularly be, and for that matter, senators of both parties, to this real affront to the Senate's treaty-making power and congressional responsibilities in this area?
Well, Frank, that's an excellent question. As we have seen time and time again with this administration, they don't quite understand or want to respect the separation of powers. They don't want to be just the executive branch. They feel like they should be the judicial and the legislative branch as well. And time again, they have overstepped their authority, whether it's in Obamacare, whether it's this on this new one on climate change. And that's why I congratulate the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, for bringing forth this lawsuit that is using Obamacare as the test case of where the president has overstepped his limits. And I'm optimistic that we can file this suit soon. And I think even though we're just using Obamacare as an example, I think it speaks to so many other things.
It certainly does. And among them will be probably next an immigration executive order that I think may be very problematic as well. Eliana Rose-Leighton, and we are out of time, I'm sorry to say. I had hoped to also talk with you about the leading role that you have been playing, to your great credit, I think, on trying to punish the Maduro regime in Venezuela for what it is up to, repressing human rights and otherwise subverting, I think, the rule of law in that country, and of course threatening our interests as well. But thank you so much for your leadership on all of these issues, and for joining us from time to time. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, Elliot Abrams. We'll talk more with him about ceasefire in Gaza, where we go from there.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined by an old friend and colleague, Elliot Abrams, a former Assistant Secretary of State in the George W. Bush administration, also a Deputy National Security Advisor to the President, a man of great expertise and experience over many years, both in government and out, and one of the go-to guys on matters involving particularly the Middle East. Elliot Abrams, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Thanks a lot, Frank. I'm glad to be here.
I guess the place I'd like to begin is with Hamas and the recently suspended, I guess you might say, conflict with Israel. Is there any prospect, in your estimation, Elliot, that this is the end of hostilities between these two parties? And if not, is this a good idea to stop fighting?
Well, it's not the end of hostilities because Hamas still exists. It's a terrorist group whose goal is the destruction of the state of Israel. Now, hostilities may be suspended for a long time. I mean, after the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah, Hezbollah has pretty much kept that border quiet for 8 years. But the conflict is not over. The question of whether Israel should have gone in to reconquer Gaza and rule it is, you know, being debated in Israel right now. But I think most Israelis will, in the end, come out where Netanyahu did, which is that they're probably better off having done most of this from the air. What they've got to do now, though, is continue to pound Hamas in Gaza if there's any rocket fire at all. In 2005, when Sharon got out of Gaza, that's what he said he would do. He said, one rocket, you know, bam, he didn't do it. There were rockets from Gaza, but he did not respond to them. Huge mistake, because the lesson you're teaching is you can do that with impunity. Bibi said yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu said, I'm, you know, going to respond to any rocket fire. I hope he does that, because it's very important to establish that it will not be permitted.
And where does this leave us, Elliot Abrams, with respect to something I know you've worked on for a long time? In fact, your book, Tested by Zion, the Bush Administration and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, addresses at some length the two-state solution as the ultimate objective here. What are the prospects for that in light of what has recently happened with Hamas? And presumably, it's going to continue to operate at least in Gaza, if not in the West Bank as well.
Well, I find it incredible, Frank, that people are saying now's the moment to go for a comprehensive peace and establish a Palestinian state. The lesson that Israelis have learned is it is unthinkable right now to pull out of the West Bank militarily and face the prospect of Hamas being in control of the West Bank. As bad as rockets and mortars out of Gaza are, the notion of rockets and mortars coming out of the West Bank is completely unacceptable to Israelis. That would mean rockets and mortars at Jerusalem from, you know, being fired from 500 feet away. It would mean Ben-Gurion Airport, Israel's international airport, would be completely unusable. It would mean rockets and mortars at Tel Aviv and Haifa, which are just something like 10 miles from the West Bank. So I think that nothing has changed for the better since the Kerry effort collapsed a few months ago. And this is absolutely not the moment to think about a comprehensive peace agreement. I think that's really quite absurd.
Yeah. Well, it, I guess, is a question as to whether it will ever make sense in light of the kinds of dynamics and forces that are at work there. But we'll be following that closely, as I know will you, Elliot Abrams, now with the Council on Foreign Relations. Let me turn to another part of this portfolio that you've also been following closely and I know been very concerned about, and that is what's happened in the aftermath of the efforts by the Bush administration to leave a reasonably stable, reasonably democratic Iraq, now, among other things, afflicted by this outfit that goes by varying names but currently calls itself the Islamic State. Where are we and where do you think we're going from here in light of what's happened since you left office, Elliot?
Well, it's hard to prove, of course, that if the Obama administration had acted in a different way, we wouldn't be where we are, but I think that's the truth. Iraq was in much better shape when President Obama came to office than it is now, because his sole goal was to get out as quickly as he could, regardless of what was left. Now we have this terrible situation of the obliteration of the border between Iraq and Syria by a ferocious and increasingly powerful terrorist group, ISIS, or the Islamic State. We have done some useful military action in Iraq to help the Iraqi army and to help the Kurdish army, the Peshmerga, fight against the Islamic State. What we have not done is anything in Syria. because although they have destroyed that border, we're acting as if the border was still there, and it's unthinkable for us to do anything in Syria. I think that's very foolish and very dangerous. And the question today really is whether the Obama administration will do what all of our allies in the region hope they will do, which is to take more forceful action, at least from the air, to help people who are fighting the Islamic State be more successful in fighting it. You know, we see now that the president has asked the military to look at the possibility of hitting some targets in Syria. And I don't know, you know, as we're talking today, we don't know where that's going to lead. But this is an administration that has allowed this to happen, that has stood back and watched and congratulated itself on its brilliant handling of Iraq and Syria, while this really dangerous group, dangerous now to the homeland as well, got to be the world's largest terrorist group.
Yeah. We're going to be talking more shortly with one of your former employees at the Hudson Institute, Hélène Problet, about the danger of that to the homeland. But, Elliot, just staying with how we got to this pass, in part, it would appear, the rise of ISIS and for that matter, other jihadists like it on both sides of the Iraqi-Syrian border is a function of the very strong support that they've enjoyed, at least to this point, by two nations that we are usually told are our allies, namely Qatar and Turkey. And I just wonder, as a person who's really steeped in the, you know, internecine and various other bizarre qualities of this particular region, what do you make of the role that these two nations have played? And should we continue to consider them, really, as allies in light of what they're doing to help people who unmistakably are our enemies?
Not really. I mean, in the case of Turkey, they now have an Islamist government. I mean, we are all concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt, in Gaza. Basically, they have one in Turkey because they're not Arabs. They don't belong to the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, in the same way. But under the current leadership of now President Erdogan, they've completely changed the political and military orientation of Turkey, which was once a reliable NATO ally. Same thing with Qatar. You know, we have a huge air base in Qatar, very useful air base in Qatar, Al Udeid. But their political orientation is really toward the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, you know, from our point of view, it can look crazy, right? I mean, they're a monarchy. They ought to be defending themselves from the Muslim Brotherhood. But that's not the political ideology of the people running the country. The current emir, his father, the previous emir, who's still around and has a lot of influence. And they seem to be using their money to support throughout the region, Iraq, Syria, all the way over to Libya, Muslim Brotherhood groups and groups that are even far more radical. What I'd like to see us do, frankly, is begin to move that base out of Qatar. We're defending them. We're defending them against Iran, for example. And in the Bush years, I occasionally tried to raise the question of moving out of that base. And the Pentagon went nuts. You know, we have a war in Iraq, we have a war in Afghanistan, we need that base. I think we need to send a message to the Qataris that base is not there in perpetuity.
Yeah. This is a subject for a longer conversation, and I look forward to having it with you. Elliot Abrams, now with the Council on Foreign Relations, author of Tested by Zion, The Bush Administration and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. Keep it up. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, as promised, Hélène Problet joins us to talk a bit further about how this global jihad is manifesting itself in our own hemisphere and even here in the United States. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Obama's outrageously unconstitutional behavior just keeps accumulating. The latest example is a rumored intention to use his pen and phone to circumvent bipartisan congressional opposition to his radical climate change agenda. Reportedly, the president will assert that he could enter into what amounts to a new treaty on the subject by claiming to be simply amending a very different old one. This gambit would make a mockery of the U.S. Senate's co-equal role in treaty making. The president evidently believes that he can get away with such an affront to the Constitution, as he has so many others, and oblige the United States to reduce its use of carbon-emitting coal. But will endangered coal state Democrats, let alone energy security-minded Republicans, let him perpetrate such a travesty? This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by one of the most seasoned and accomplished professionals on Capitol Hill in recent memory. She is Dr. Lim Problet. She is a woman who served at the highest ranks of the congressional staff, dealing with foreign affairs for the better part of two decades, including as the chief of staff and staff director of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. We had one of her bosses on in the first segment and another of her former bosses on in the second segment, but we're delighted to have her on in her own right. Elaine, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
The fact that today, of all days, I'm on your show along with former bosses, I think it's a little bit of divine intervention.
There's a certain karma to it, that's for sure. Let me talk about some of the things that you've specialized in over the years and have been writing about most recently, I think, at The Hill, that tie into the dramas that we've been discussing overseas. Namely, what is happening with respect to the activities of global jihadists, for want of a better term, Sharia-adherent, you know, terrorists, whatever you wish to use to characterize them, in our own hemisphere, and therefore much closer at home, much more of an imminent danger than might be folks who are, well, we're sold a plane ride away, but still a long plane ride away as opposed to a hop, skip, and a jump.
Well, Frank, in answering that question, I just want to step back just a little bit. Machiavelli has been maligned as a political theorist, but he is one that has called it time and time again, and it's his warnings that directly apply to what is taking place now, what took place just prior to 9/11, 2001, what took place prior to 9/11, 2012 with Benghazi. He kept saying that political disorders, if you ID them in advance, if you are aware of them in advance, you can cure them. You can eradicate the disease, the problem. But when you allow them to fester, to grow, to metastasize, which is a term that has been used with ISIS, ISIL, however we refer to them, whether we use the Arabic term or the English term, when you allow them to metastasize, then the solutions are too late. Just like any disease, some have referred to ISIS as a cancer. When you allow it to metastasize, you are limited in the options to eradicate the problem and to address the problem once and for all. And that is what's happening with the hemisphere. And the timing of our conversation today coincides with the transfer of command in the Special Operations Command from General McRaven to General Votel. And the reason why I raise that in responding to your question is because the Special Operations Command and both of these commanders talked and continue to focus on the need for situational awareness, for political resolution, military resolution, for reach and access. However, those apply when you're looking at the global jihadist threat in the greater Middle East and North Africa, when you're looking at it in Southeast and Southwest Asia. However, when those particular priorities are applied or considered in context of the Western Hemisphere, they are actually not being applied. The threat in the hemisphere is either ignored or minimized. And a key part of it is there's both the political neglect and then there's a disconnect from the rest of the national security strategy. The Western Hemisphere is just looked at as the drug command. Southern Command is looked at as the drug command or just the drugs and thugs command, not looking at the integral part that it plays in the global terrorist network, whether it's terrorist financing or the actual physical transfer of terrorists in our backyard. You know, we talk about the enemy within. Well, as you have said many times with regards to our porous borders, the enemy is here. We already have Islamic jihadists in the United States. But what happens is when their law enforcement agencies or Homeland Security or intel agencies or even our Northern Command is looking at the threat of Hezbollah or even Hamas or even Al-Qaeda affiliates or supporters in the United States, they look at it as a law enforcement issue rather than part of the global war on terrorists.
What we're confronting now in, I'm afraid, not just how we handle this threat domestically, to the extent we do, but even internationally increasingly, is as a kind of law enforcement problem. Andy McCarthy, among others, has pointed out this is kind of the way we address these things prior to 9/11, the September 10th model, as he calls it. This is particularly worrying in our own hemisphere, though, because as you've done so much to call attention to, warn against, document, and try to correct, what we're looking at is sort of the worst of both worlds. We've got benign neglect, perhaps you might call it, of the hemisphere. We've got inadequate resources being applied to it. And then to the extent we're thinking about it at all, we're applying this this inappropriate September 10th model to it. As a result, what does that mean in terms of what's happening now south of our border and very likely to come across it in even greater numbers in the future if border insecurity persists?
Well, and that's the catalyst for my driving. Because of my congressional background, the hope is if you continue to raise awareness and you continue to press the policymakers then hopefully the resources will be provided. The attention and the prioritization will be provided, or at the very least, that Western Hemisphere considerations will be integrated into the broader national security strategy. And General Vogel's induction, so to speak, as the commander of special operations can provide an opportunity. Why do I say that? Well, he talked about the threat of WMD terrorism. We've had, as I outline in one of my recent pieces, there have been a number of recent incidents, including just a few months ago in Mexico, where radioactive substances have been stolen. Some have been found, some have yet to be discovered and tracked down. And we seem, and when I say we, I say it's essentially the U.S. government in its totality, there are friendlies. There are those in the intelligence community and in the military infrastructure who do get it. But generally, the U.S. government, and certainly under this administration, they look at these as isolated incidents, and they accept the narrative from the host governments that these radioactive substances were not being targeted. Well, you can say that maybe one time, but when you have three or four or five incidents of these radioactive substances being stolen, and when you can't really track down the genesis of the criminal organizations that are behind it, and then you contextualize that with threats and information intelligence that we have had throughout the years of Al-Qaeda, of Hezbollah, of other jihadist groups, trying to secure radioactive material and using the Western Hemisphere, the narco-trafficking networks, the arms for drugs networks, the terror financing networks that have already been developed for some time in our hemisphere, to then bring them into, cross the border into the U.S., then it's problematic when you have this mentality.
Elim, we're just hard out of time, but what you've really laid out now is not only a distinct danger of these kinds of terrorist operations inside our own country, but that they may well be equipped with weapons of mass destruction. Elim, I hope that you will come back to us again very soon to drill down further on what we can do to really reduce this danger. But in the moment, we're going to be talking with Mark Krikorian about steps that we're taking that probably, if anything, are going to compound that danger by opening our border even further and adding to the magnet to people coming here illegally.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at DailyCaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at DailyCaller.com.
It could be your father, your sister, your neighbor, or your best friend. Or it could be someone like this soldier who writes, quote, "This is a great thing you are doing here. Keep up the good work." AnySoldier.com has become synonymous with goodwill and great stuff. The troops really appreciate the effort. Take care and thanks again, end quote. Log on to www.anysoldier.com and find out what you can do to help our deployed men and women in the armed forces.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Mark Krikorian, one of the country's preeminent experts on matters involving the border and immigration security issues and how the, well, malfeasance of the Obama administration with respect to them is putting us all at risk. Mark Krikorian is, of course, the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, an absolutely indispensable organization. You can find out more about it at CIS.org. I commend it to you. Not least his book, most recently, How Obama is Transforming America Through immigration. Mark, maybe we could just quickly pick up where we left off with Ilim a moment ago, talking about the dangers associated with border insecurity, given the presence in our own hemisphere of both, of course, narco trafficking, drug smuggling, human smuggling, cartels, and terrorist organizations. How serious a problem does this represent elsewhere along the line?
There's a couple of problems that relate specifically to security here that immigration policy is affecting, or a couple of ways immigration policy is affecting it. One is that the border itself can't be patrolled and observed as effectively as it needs to be when there are thousands of these Central American supposedly minors, as well as lots of families with single moms, basically being waved into the United States. Border Patrol agents are spending a substantial amount of their time just doing paperwork instead of looking at the border.
Paperwork and changing diapers and feeding people and all manner of other distractions, right?
Right. It's not like it's really the Border Patrol agent's fault. They're sort of stuck holding the bag. This is a policy problem, but it's a real problem. The perimeter is not secured properly. And then the other part of it is that the whole environment, or the whole sort of perception of Obama's approach to immigration, the laxity of it, the various kinds of amnesties and rewards that are given out, serve as a magnet for people to come here. So, you know, this perimeter isn't secure, and we're actually making it more appealing for people to sneak into the country. And before anybody imagines, well, you know, what's the problem with just a dishwasher from Guatemala coming here as far as security goes, the fact is that any system a Guatemalan dishwasher can sneak through is one that a cartel assassin or an ISIS suicide bomber can also sneak through. I don't know if, you know, there are, in fact, ISIS people who have used this vulnerability yet, but, you know, the whole point is if you knew that, then you wouldn't have to worry about that sort of thing. You'd know everything. You don't. We have to have security against both the dishwasher and the terrorist because you can't distinguish between the two with regard to immigration control.
Yeah. Mark, one of the things that I think is so critical to the work you do is the point you just made, that whenever anybody talks about amnesty, is that there's a magnet effect to attracting more to come in. And I just want you to address in that vein what we're told is going to be coming shortly, if not, I would bet Friday afternoon of Labor Day weekend would be prime time, the president's new executive order extending amnesty to perhaps as many as 5 million illegal aliens now in this country.
The White House staff, anyway, has been talking about this for quite a while. And it probably won't take the form of an actual executive order, because even that's almost too formal, even though executive orders are kind of ad hoc to begin with. It's probably going to be memos and letters and stuff to DHS, the point of which, though, will be to actually accord work visas and Social Security numbers and driver's licenses to millions of illegal aliens. This is not, as the White House claims, just a matter of putting off their deportation. It's sort of looking the other way, or policeman stops you for speeding and you're not a criminal and the car's not stolen, so he says, you know, I'll just let you go this time, slow down. The Obama administration has done that for the illegal population for years. What they're proposing is actually more of a formal legalization, a kind of green card light. It's not a full green card, but other than the path to citizenship, it gives them everything they want, right to work, Social Security numbers, right to travel abroad and return, all of that stuff. And this would represent probably the greatest peacetime power grab by a president in history, because it's the president essentially saying, Congress didn't give me what I wanted, and so I'm not all that interested in dealing with the processes that the Constitution has set up, and I'm just going to do it on my own. The idea that this won't have any future effects on immigration, in other words, won't incentivize prospective illegal aliens who are abroad, is silly. Of course, they're going to look at this and they're going to say, yet one more piece of evidence, a pretty big one, that Americans aren't serious about enforcing their immigration laws. So what the heck? Let's give it a try. Maybe we'll get our own amnesty a few years down the road.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw a poll, I believe it was the Pew poll the other day, that said fully a third of the people in Mexico now would rather live in the United States. So there's no end of supply, and that's to say nothing of people elsewhere in our own hemisphere and people who will come through our hemisphere to get here. Mark, before we run out of time, I want to turn very quickly to something that you commented on yesterday that came about as a result of a settlement of a lawsuit, I believe, between the American Civil Liberties Union San Diego chapter and the Department of Homeland Security. The storyline goes that the administration has been so aggressive in deporting people that it's managed to throw some people out who should have been given some kind of due process. And now, according to this settlement, certainly at least nine of the plaintiffs in this matter will get that kind of opportunity. They'll be invited back into the United States by the government and given a chance to plead their case for staying. But as you've pointed out, Mark, there's a distinct possibility that this or some other judge may say, well, there's a class action basis for doing this, and hundreds of thousands of people may be invited back. This is adding insult to injury, it would seem to me.
Yeah, I mean, the case itself is just narrowly these nine Mexican illegal aliens who, as you emphasize, the government will invite back, bring back into the United States, no questions asked, and they get to then file their cases before an immigration judge. Of course, if they lose, the government's not going to look for them and throw them out. So basically, they're being let in to stay. The most dangerous part, though, I mean, that's nine people. It's bad enough. But the dangerous part is that if the judge recognizes the class, in other words, it's a class action attempt, it's not just thousands. It's hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants would be able to be invited back into the United States in order to clog up the immigration courts, and they'd all, whether they won or lost, they'd all stay anyway. So, I mean, this really is part of the ACLU's attempt to basically undo America's borders. And the administration is cooperating with it. It's a settlement.
Absolutely, and to imperil our security to boot. Mark, very quickly, and I've got less than a minute, just what is your view of what the Republicans are doing in the face of these affronts to the Constitution? I've talked earlier in the program with Ileana Rose-Leighton about a similar kind of affront on treaty-making power and climate change. But what do you think the Republicans are doing, and what should they be doing to contest this?
Well, you know, part of the problem is the Republicans, too many of the Republicans actually want or like what Obama would be doing. And so there's a kind of ambiguity here. And what they need to be doing is saying, look, we're not talking impeachment, even though this is an impeachable offense. It's just that that's the last resort. When we get control of the Senate, if the voters give it to us, we will use the other powers given to us, the power of the purse, et cetera, to try to rein in this imperial executive, because it's not just a Republican-Democrat thing. If there's a Republican president, we don't want him behaving in this way either. That's what the message they need to send. It's up to the leadership whether they get their act together and do it.
They need to send it right quick. Mark Krikorian, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies, and needless to say, your contributions here and elsewhere to our understanding of just how immense the stakes are, not least for, you know, the nature of our democratic polity, that the demographics might be changed so dramatically and perhaps unalterably if the president has his way. Keep up that good work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.